Anne-Marie? Hi, Anne-Marie. Hi, Shirley. Shirley, you're muted. Unmute yourself, Shirley. What happened to Anne-Marie? Can you unmute yourself, Shirley? Hello, Anne-Marie. Hello, Shirley. Shirley, can you unmute yourself?
Just a minute. I'm trying to get in here.
Okay.
How come I'm not coming up?
Because you got a punch of those down at the bottom.
Punch what? I don't want to start a video. Okay, a video, huh? Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay. Hi. Shirley is showing there, but she's not opened up yet.
She's trying to unmute. Shirley, it's in the lower left-hand corner of your screen, and there's a mute signal that has a little microphone on the left-hand side, and you just click that. And there's a line through it which says that you're muted, and you just click that and you'll unmute the lower left-hand corner of your screen. Maybe she can't hear me.
She has to do stop video to start video. That's what I had to do in the lower left-hand corner. She says, going to sign out. There she is.
Okay, I knew how to do it, and I did it a couple of times, but apparently you have to click on the little got it, and it says the thing is being recorded before you can unmute. Oh, and you can see me. Oops.
There you
are. There she is. And all her library glory. Yes. Well, welcome, you guys.
So, Kwan, one of the things I noticed signing in tonight, because it's all often very hard to hear you, is there it says test your microphone and all of that, that you can set the amount of volume that you want to feed out as well.
Right.
Have you done that? Because you always sound very quiet.
I just put it on 100.
Oh, okay. Well, mine has a different arrangement. So, you know, I move a little bar, but that's okay. You know, that'll do fine. We'll muddle through.
Muddling away. So great to see you all. And you I too. Wanted to know that I called Gary Charest tonight, and I invited him to the meeting. I know he doesn't want to do Zoom, but I invited him to come to my house and said, you know, I know you don't want to Zoom, but come to my house, and we'd love to see you. And it was a great excuse. He was a great excuse to clean my house. So there you
go. We all need them, don't we?
I need the kick in the pants. I do. But he didn't show up. But at any rate, so I touched base with Gary, and We haven't seen him all year, and so that was nice. It was good to see him. Yeah.
Good. I called Mark Fleischer too. Oh, and asked him if he'd like to join us. And he said, I didn't call him until pretty late, you know. And he said, no, he had other things tonight, but he thanked me for it. And I reminded him again of what time we meet and invited him to come back.
Yeah, I think I send him an invitation every month, but he never comes. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
What about Brittany?
I usually send one to her too, so... We haven't heard from her either, but you know, she's got 6 kids.
Oh yeah, I know.
And this is dinner time. I assume that this would always be dinner time for children, you know?
So, yes.
So at any rate, we haven't heard, it would be fun to do something. I can't even imagine a time when you wouldn't be busy if you're raising 6 kids, so.
Nor can I. Yeah. I knew a woman who had about that many kids, and we went to their house one time, and her husband had just bought her a dishwasher, and she sold it to us because she said, the only time I have any time to myself during the day is when I'm up to my elbows in soap suds. And she says, I'm not giving up my dishwashing. My only time for pizza.
You know, I have a gay friend, and one of his favorite things to do was wash the dishes. You know, here comes Bernadette. Here comes Bernadette.
Oh, good.
Okay. So it was amazing to me. I mean, that's the kind of friend to have. So I would cook, and he would wash dishes, and he was thrilled to do it.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was great. Hello, Bernadette.
Hello.
Hey. We can't. Oh, there you are.
Oh, there you are.
Hey. Checking in. I was saying that I invited Gary Charest to come tonight, and he didn't, but it was fun touching base with him, and it was an excuse for me to clean my house. So there you have it. How are you and your family doing, Bernadette?
We are doing very good. How is everybody doing?
Okay. Good. So is the baby, how are you with the COVID, whatever, the latest?
Yeah. My husband's doing good. The baby's getting better. He still has some breathing issues, but he's about 80% better.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Baby has still got some side effects of COVID then.
Yeah, a lot of congestion, a lot of mucus, but
yeah.
Gary at your house, huh?
Yeah, a little bit, but yeah, it's been a whirlwind.
Yeah. Things in my house.
Shirley, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. My son and grandson both got COVID, and Lucas, recovered quickly and so forth. Ken didn't have it too badly. He had already had his 2 vaccinations, and he was scheduled to get his booster, but the COVID came before that did. But my sister in Deming, no, she's no longer in Deming. She's in Las Cruces now. She and her husband, neither of whom had been vaccinated, both came down with COVID, and he is on a ventilator right now. And he's been in the hospital for a couple of weeks, and they're fighting to get him into a shape where they can put the ventilator in his trachea. But he has to reach certain thresholds of being able to breathe on his own. And there, and then my niece, who was partially vaccinated, came down with it. Her 2-year-old came down with it. And her 16-year-old boy, who, he also came down with it. They all recovered fairly quickly. Her daughter, who was vaccinated, did not get it. And and they were all doing pretty fine and were back in school. That was about 3 weeks ago when everybody got it. And I just got notice from her that her 2-year-old came home from daycare,
with strep throat this week. So they're in for another bout of certainly quarantine and so on before, you know, I mean, it's the kind of thing that my brother-in-law is out of the COVID ICU, but he's still in ICU. He's not testing positive for COVID, but he had gotten the pneumonia and there's some other kinds of infections going on. They were going to try to figure out what kind he had and treat it with the proper antibiotics, but I haven't heard yet whether they traced it down.
Sounds like the COVID long haul. He's got.
Yeah, it does. It does. They are expecting him to be there. I think they're expecting him to be there for 30 to 40 days, probably. And he's right now, he's in a medically induced coma because that's the only way. He was in the early stages of this thing, he was fighting them. You know, he was kind of delusional and or experiencing some kind of delirium and was fighting them and pulling tubes out and doing all that sort of thing. So they had to sedate him to treat him. So that's where we are. We'll just keep praying that if enough people keep hearing these stories, that they'll do what they need to do.
Shirley, you may be interested in this. And this is an announcement that I wanted to. I go to the library regularly because I love to read and I love to get their DVDs. So there is a writing contest or a writing opportunity to talk about what COVID has meant to you in the last 2 years. Shirley, you certainly have certainly have the stories to tell, but and so do you, Bernadette. And it's for 1,500 words or less. And it's a story or a poem.
Oh.
And let me give you, and I will write in, let me write in here. Let's see. So I can erase this. I'll write in here. Let's see. What has the last 2 years of COVID virus meant to you?
Okay.
Write a story or poem, 1,500 words or less. Submit by December 20th to danny.garcia@belen-nm.gov.
Danny Garcia. The name sounds familiar. Who is that?
He's a librarian at the Belen Library.
Oh, okay.
All righty.
And he wanted a way. So with this whole, you know, I don't know if you've been to the library, but it's very daunting. They do your temperature check when you go in. They want everybody to wear a mask. For a long time, they weren't letting people use their computers at all, and they did a whole thing where they wouldn't let people even into the building for a while. So they've really been locked down a lot. So it's been really hard to use the library, basically. So he wants to extend this to the community to find out. What is people's experience, to find out what's going on in the community and how have you been affected by COVID? So,
okay.
And we've all been affected, haven't we? Yes.
Yes, we have. Even those of us who did, you know, who thought we were going to weather the storm quite well, you get to a certain point where, you know, all of a sudden it catches up to you. I guess.
You get what's called cabin fever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year I got that. Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's very limiting. So, okay. Well, let's hear what your poems are for gratitude. Anybody got, Anne Marie, I know you had one.
Yay.
I had, I
have this book, and it was a self-published book, but I submitted it to the Great West Book Festival and in the spiritual genre, and I won first place for that one. That was a while back, but it was a lot of fun. So I have two poems. Thankfulness 38. Actually, the book is broken down where my angels kind of spoke with me, and I wrote chapters on different subject matters. Why me, lesson one, and prayer, gossip, anger, an art of listening, and faith, bereavement. I had one person that read this book on lost her father. She was so angry, and she got my book and read the section on bereavement and emailed me and said how much it helped her. And I was like, wow, I love it. That was awesome. So 38, I have, there it is. It's called Thankfulness. It's written inspired by the Philippians, chapter 4, verse 8. Gratitude. Most people do not understand it. This precious gift presented by our Lord. For if we are beholden of divine holy writ, his blessings are 1,000 times encored. Be prepared to offer prayers of thanksgiving, pledged deep within the purest of heart. And our Father will endow understanding, wisdom, and knowledge will become an art. Philippians 4 reveals whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely. It is said to think on these things, and God will be with us completely. Surrender yourself with prayer of tribute, without expectations of divine favor. Forgo enjoyment with a humble salute, and praise the Lord, our pious liberator. That was my thankfulness.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you.
You said something in there. Oh, what was it? It really triggered something in me. It was like about 6 lines from the end. What do you have? I'll stop you. I'll yell as soon as you get to it.
Philippians 4 is the third verse. Uh-huh. And that's just repeating the verse from, surrender yourself with prayer of tribute, without expectation of divine favor. Forgo enjoyment with a humble salute, and praise the Lord, our pious liberator. Before that?
It must have been like a couple of 3 lines before that.
Okay. Be prepared to offer prayers of thanksgiving, pledged deep within the purest of heart. And our Father will endow understanding, wisdom, and knowledge will become an art.
I like that.
Otherwise, the next phase is Philippians 4 reveals whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, or lovely. It is said to think on these things.
That's it right there. I have to.
It is said, think on these things, and God will be with us completely.
Okay, because what that reminded me of was this thing that was some article I read somewhere, and they were talking about mental health in these times. And what they said was that the kinds of things that you tend to read or hear over and over are the way that you will kind of respond. You'll absorb and respond to the world. If you hear negative things all the time, you're likely to be more negative. Yes. If you hear good things, you're likely to be happier and, you know, react better, think the world is a better place and all that sort of thing. And so anyway, that struck a chord with me there, reminded me. Thank you.
That's good.
Easier said than done. Easier said than done, Anne-Marie. But yes, well done.
Yeah.
Well, it's all 100% your thoughts. And your thoughts create what you think, what you do, what you act, what you say. It's always what your thoughts are. If you're mad at yourself and you're thinking these internal thoughts of destruction, then you're going to draw destruction. But if you think of positive and happiness and be the happy-go-lucky. For example, I had to go shopping this morning. And on Wednesdays, I read to a 93-year-old lady every Wednesday. Every Wednesday. We read from the Bible, read stories, we read all kinds of stuff every Wednesday. But I had to go do some shopping. And I was in the way of this lady. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. We're wearing masks. And I said, I'm so sorry. And I said, but happy holidays and have a wonderful Christmas. And the lady said, thank you, Mrs. Claus. And she just picked up a conversation and we talked for 30 minutes. Oh, well, about 20 minutes. We talked for about 20 minutes. She's just telling me all about her story, her life. She just needed someone to talk to. Happy-go-lucky, just saying Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. And she said, thank you, Mrs. Claus. Being happy in the mind, just sharing that happiness attitude makes other people that you don't even know enjoy life. Just going shopping for 20 whole minutes. So it was actually quite interesting. So that was this morning. I do believe it.
Yes, who's next?
Okay, I guess you are, Bernadette. We can't hear Quan.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you. No. I can't hear Quan. Yes, now I can.
Okay, yeah. I need to be closer to my camera then.
Uh-huh. Well, I didn't write a gratitude poem this month. Shame on me, huh?
Well,
but I did get my book published.
Yay! All right. So, yay.
Wonderful.
So, can we get that from you, Bernadette?
Show us the cover again. Show us the cover. That's gorgeous.
What does it say?
The title is called Putting Thy Tongue Out into the Wild.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So I could read you something from here.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let's see. I can read a short one. So here's a short one in here. It's called Give. Give with all your heart. Give unconditionally. Give without explanation. Give without expecting anything in return. Give without details. Give without no regrets. Give just to give.
Wow. Well, that's lovely.
Yes, that's lovely. Yes.
So would we like me to read one more? I'll read another short one. This one's called Autumn. Listen, whispers, wind, whistling, rattles, current, harmony and sync. Inhale, autumn bliss. Woe, thy delicate flower. Engage in purpose. Life circle begins, fertilized with nutrients, searching for detail. Leaves transcend to fall. Harvest gathers fruitful crops, replenished by rain. Dance through poppy fields, a sympathy of pattern, composed progression. So I have a copy for you ladies. I'm just waiting for my Arthur copies to come in. I only have one copy right now.
Fabulous. So when did you get it? When was it actually published?
I just received this within the last 6 or 7 days. So
Okay. The end of November then. That's great. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, Shirley, you want to go?
Yes, I actually did write a poem this time, breaking my long string of not doing so. Well, saying grace. Let me be grateful for the blessings I have and that others have too. For blessings should not be solely owned to be considered precious. I treasure my breath because it is life, not because my brother gasps for air. I treasure the breeze bearing the fragrance of apples, though others feast on that fruit, and I have not yet broken my fast. Those who take extra delight in possessions or good fortune because their neighbors lack the same are to be pitied, for they will never know the joy of a heart overflowing in thanks. What they have is avarice, which can never be satisfied. Those who have little and resent the owner of the grand house on the hill for his wealth or attainments are not free of obligation. They should first knock on the rich man's door and grant him the chance to be gracious before they set fire to his fields in envy. What a wonder if two lonely neighbors should meet, share bread, and learn to give thanks for each other's company. That's it.
That's good.
Yeah.
You're back. Can't hear you again, Quan.
A lot about the pitfalls of greed.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Here's mine.
Okay.
Gratitude for anger and life's tough lessons. For the courage fueled by anger to leave wounded parents and attend college away from home, I am grateful. For the agonizing awareness I could save my marriage or save myself, and the selfish anger I chose myself, I am grateful. For the picture of a dead plant as the answer to whether I should stay in the pot of teacher tenure with anger at my boss remaining unresolved, I am grateful. For the illness which claimed my livelihood and capacity to work and forced a migration to a warmer climate, I am grateful. For the therapist who gifted me with understanding and a slow path out of illness and anger at myself, I am grateful. For the slow dawning spiritual insights of the inside job of compassion, empathy, and emotional honesty, I am grateful. For the many failed attempts to find mutual respect that forced me to work on myself, I am grateful. For anger as a teacher and an impetus to leave that which is no longer sustainable, I am grateful. For the wisdom to trust my anger instead of suppression and smiley denial, I am grateful. For the creator's hand in each event, I am grateful.
I love that. Being grateful for the things that look like they're not such blessings are, those are blessings.
Yeah, you had a lot to be grateful for.
I had a lot of tough shit to be grateful for.
Yeah, there was a lot to be grateful for.
So do any of you have any other poems? I have some by Emily Dickinson, they're all about gratefulness, and I hardly understand them at all. So I would love your input on these.
Oh, that's good.
Anybody have any other poems they want to read?
No, I'm good. I do want to say one thing, though. There's something coming up that you all need to know about. And that is that there's going to be, on December 13th, there's going to be a Zoom town meeting of the Poetry Society so that everybody can give their input into where we should go next year and so forth. Zach already has some ideas, but he's looking for feedback and kind of looking for people to express their aspirations for what our society could be. In other words, if you were queen for a day, what would you do to make this society good, you know?
I give myself a new car. If I were queen for a day. Well, well, you want to talk about that for a few minutes then? Or?
Not really. I just wanted to give you a heads up on it.
Okay.
And there's another thing that we decided to do. I think that we were talking about the need for some sort of online newsletter. It was a little bit more than just a word from the president. And so anyway, it looks like that might be starting up. And I've got a couple of articles kind of planned for it. But anyway, I should be willing to take other things you want to put into it. And let's see. Oh, and one of the things that we're going to be putting on that newsletter is going to be that Debbie Gutierrez is going to set up a suggestion box for anybody who has an idea or a problem or whatever else who wants to find a solution to it, to enter it in there. But the hook is that you can't just use it to gripe or complain. You have to have at least suggest a solution or a way to fix the problem. If you're gonna bring it up, give us at least one way we might go about fixing it, or tell us how you're gonna do it and what help you need.
So. Okay.
Let's go call grandma.
Okay. Oh.
It's Miss Mia.
Yeah.
So Bernadette, are you still the vice president?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes.
And did you guys ever get a secretary?
No, not yet. I don't know if he has any potentials. Okay. Anything in the works, Shirley?
I kind of talked to one person about it and was not encouraged. That way. Actually, I've talked to two people about it, and both of them were kind of, against it. But I have my eye on somebody else. I might get in touch with her and see about it.
Okay. Then, as long as you're talking business, let me talk about the next poetry meeting.
Okay.
Next year. It's going to be January 5th of 2022.
Wow.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, really.
How do you want to start the new year?
I think we should write poems about resolutions.
How about poems about rhyming resolutions?
Rhyming okay. Resolutions. I love it.
Let's see. Okay.
What was his name? Ben? I remember. He used to be one of the oldest poets here in New Mexico. He was a member of the Poetry Alliance, and everything he used to teach poetry. And always in rhyming. And his first name was Ben. He lived up in Rio Rancho, out in that area with his wife. He passed away last year. But he always, everything he did was a challenge with rhyming.
And he would challenge everybody else that came to poetry to, all right, that's a really good poem. Now put it to rhyme. And he would do that. It was fun to listen to some of these people that only wrote free verse trying to do rhyming and make the same poem that they already wrote the same thoughts.
So guys, do you want to have anything? Would somebody like to do a presentation on rhyming or talk about what rhyming is or ways to rhyme or anything like that?
Oh, I can do that too. I have a bunch of stuff on rhyming because, you know, I rhyme all the time. And I actually got one of Ben's old, some of his stuff that he was doing. I can find it. But yeah, because he used to give us classes on rhyming too. I could try something for you.
Okay, yeah. So why don't we say, let's see, anybody else want to do anything on rhyming?
I have an essay on rhyming. Yeah, I think I'll submit it for our newsletter instead.
Sounds fun, yeah.
I'll
probably submit it to the national newsletter. And then we could use it in our own too, you know. But it's a very different take on it. It has more to do with things like cockatoos dancing and things like that. When you so we'll see.
I might look at why to rhyme or ways to rhyme or. I heard some things by Sondheim the other day. You know, he died in 91, and he was great for rhyming. So I'll see what I can dig out a few things. But
that would be fun.
Maybe 5-10 minutes at the most. That's all.
Sounds good.
That's all. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Sounds good.
Okay. So So here is some Emily Dickinson. Tell me what you think this is about. Gratitude is not the mention of a tenderness, but it's still appreciation out of plumb of speech. When the sea returned no answer by the line and lead, provide it there's no sea, or rather a remoter bed. What does that mean?
A motor bed?
Remoter.
Remote.
Away bed.
Yeah.
When the sea.
We have to read that again. I always have to read Emily Dickinson about three times.
I'm just gobsmacked. Yeah. Gratitude is not the mention of a tenderness, but it's still appreciation out of plumb of speech. I think that's saying, you know, gratitude. It's a quiet appreciation that maybe you don't even talk about. Is that what it's saying?
Not only
or
that
you don't even,
or you can't even express.
Yeah. Or you don't even have to express and you can appreciate the silence.
Yeah, it's a still appreciation, a quiet appreciation out of plumb of speech. I think that's what it's saying, but I'm not sure. When the sea returned no answer, by the line and lead, proves it there's no sea, or rather a remoter bed. I think it's saying when the sea doesn't answer you and the sea moves away and kind of a retreating tide, there's still a gratitude? I'm not sure. I don't know.
Okay, let's do it line by line because, okay, just line, one line. And what is the punctuation in this thing too?
Okay, well, it with hers, it there's not a lot of punctuation.
Yeah.
So the second stanza, when the sea returned no answer.
No waves coming in, no sound from the
from the waves or the coming back at you? Because a lot of people, when they listen to the waves, they hear things coming in at them and they hear things. So maybe you're not hearing it coming at you through the waves. And then you know how it comes and swishes and splashes on the rocks and you have all that white foam foaming up, and then it goes back out into the sea. You didn't catch it then?
Uh-huh. Well, the other thing is that if the sea is returning no answer, it means somebody's asked the question.
Yeah.
I guess myself. So what does the next line say?
When the sea returned no answer, the next line is by the line and lead. So it's almost like looking for a line in the tide or a lead of the waves, I guess.
Or a fishing pole that's out there. You've thrown out when it returns no answer if you're holding a fishing pole and you've cast out and you're holding a line and a lead.
And you don't have an answer. You don't have any hook. There's nothing answering your question.
No fish on the hook.
Maybe it's not a lead. Maybe it's a lead.
By line and lead. What would be a lead then?
A lead is what they call a sinker. If you're a fisherman, it's something that takes your it's got enough weight in it so that you can throw out your hook a longer distance and then have it settle into the water.
I think lead
might be just as good a thing, but if it's not return no answer by line or lead, it means that you didn't have any bites on your
fish was on the hook.
And I would ask you, what does that have to do with gratitude?
Well, maybe she was grateful that she didn't have to take a fish off a hook. She's grateful she didn't catch the fish.
Or maybe it's when you do something good and you're expecting something in return, like a fish on the end of that line, and you don't get it. Yeah. This is the thing about gratitude.
I think that's a good twist. A little what you were saying, Bernadette, and also Anne-Marie, about Bernadette, about giving with no expectation then.
Mm-hmm.
Can you have gratitude for just the capacity to give? When the sea returned no answer by the line or lead, proves it's there's no sea, or rather a remoter bed.
She was comparing hers with an ocean, but you can also compare it to the winds and the wind through the trees and the sounds of the chimes and the sounds of the critters and the buzzing of the bees. And you could correlate it with all of that. And she correlated it with the ocean waves coming in and out. Great twin. I kind of like the fish not being on the hook because she's grateful not to mess with a dead fish on a hook.
Do you go fishing?
I love fishing.
Okay.
Yes. And I can take it off the hook.
Okay.
And I'll eat the fish too. Can't hear you, Shirley.
There is something there that gives us a hint as to whether it's lead or lead, and that is that the last line is bed, and I suppose that rhymes with lead.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, you're right. So, lead and bed.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if it's going to be, if the line and the lead are going, so we are talking about casting something out into the sea, and at least hoping that you'll get something back and not getting it. Okay, so does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So it proves that there's no sea, or rather a remoter bed, a more removed bed.
Yeah.
And the first
proves,
line.
So It proves that there's no sea?
Proves that there's no sea? And this is a question, though. This is a question.
Okay.
Oh, it's a question mark. Okay.
Yeah. When the sea returned no answer by the line and lead, proves that there's no sea, or rather a remoter bed?
Maybe a dry sea?
Okay.
A desert sea? A desert sea that's also called the sea?
Well, maybe what she's saying is it doesn't, okay, does that prove, just because we threw it out there and we didn't get what we expected, does that mean that there's necessarily not an ocean there? Or does it just mean that there is a remoter bed where the fish might be found? So maybe we didn't cast it far enough. And, but that's just because we didn't get back what we expected doesn't disprove the fact that it's out there, perhaps. Doesn't say that maybe we're expecting the wrong thing back. I don't know. I've never understood Emily Dickinson. Her stuff is so...
I think the question is, proves that there's no sea. Well, there still is a sea. You cast your line out there, but you didn't get the answer you wanted, but that doesn't mean there's not an ocean out there.
That's right.
Or just a remoter bed, or just you need to cast it out a little further. But what does that have to do with gratitude, I ask you, as a group?
I still think that it is what Bernadette was talking about was the idea of if you're only grateful for those things where you get, okay. If gratitude is only complimentary, okay. So it is that thing of, when you do a good thing that somebody should be grateful for and they don't express that gratitude to you, does that lessen the gift anymore? Or does it lessen the gift? Probably not. It's that expectation of, it sort of says, hey, if I only do something to have somebody tell me how nice I am for doing it, then.
And you shouldn't expect anything. The gratitude, you should, in your heart, the gratitude should be within oneself, not from anybody else, not from if you got the fish or did not get the fish or throwing it out and you did a bad toss or you didn't do a good throw. It doesn't matter. Gratitude is within yourself. And are you gratitude to the maker who created everything in the first place?
I think maybe she's making you think
about all of this.
The first part is gratitude is not the mention of a tenderness. So it's not about appreciation, but it's still appreciation. It's quiet appreciation out of plumb of speech, which I think is when you're not even talking about it. But it's still appreciation out of plumb of speech, out of the best words of speech. It's not about mentioning the tenderness, and it's a quiet appreciation or quiet appreciation that maybe is wordless. And when you don't get the answer that you want, does that mean that there's not an answer? Because there's not an ocean? No. Or just you need to try harder, I guess.
And maybe it's the person who's doing the act for which they might expect gratitude should be happy to do the act just because they're grateful for being able to do it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, you guys. That is decoding of Emily Dickinson and a very rich rich, a rich thing. And let's see. Okay, and I have another one. Let's see. Let me see. Okay, here's another mystery. Her stuff is mysterious. To try to speak and miss the way and ask it of the tears is gratitude's sweet poverty. The tatters that he wears. A better coat, if he possessed, would help him to conceal, not subjugate, the mutineer whose title is the soul.
Wow, okay. That's going to take another reading.
Okay. I agree. It's like I'm reading this and I'm just going, hello? Hello. To try to speak and miss the way and ask it of the tears, your tears, your sorrow, your crying, your joy, tears of joy and sorrow.
I think the woman was locked up in her room too long all by herself and really made things way too hard on herself.
To try to speak and miss the way and ask it of the tears, mm-hmm. is gratitude's sweet poverty, the tatters that he wears. So gratitude is poor and wears tatters. A better coat, if he possessed, would help him to conceal, not subjugate, the mutineer whose title is the soul.
That's heavier than I know.
Oh, wow.
But the
The
in the Bible it has Joseph of many coats or a colorful coat, and his coat was given to him by his father, who he was the youngest of all these sons, and his brothers sold him and slavery to get rid of him. So, but it turned out where he was grateful that they did that because his life ended up living like a king. So isn't that similar to almost what she's asking? To me it is, anyways.
I'm not sure.
That's where my mind went as soon as I heard her poem.
Yeah, the coat of many colors. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
The story from the Bible, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what I thought of.
Okay. I don't know. I'm still trying to think how that the last lines are the ones that are interesting to me about this idea of trying to conceal the soul. And, you know, and so anyway, makes it rather, okay, so what are those like last four lines? Or starting with a tattered cloak or tattered coat?
Okay, I'm gonna read the whole thing again.
Okay.
The first four lines, to try to speak and miss the way and ask it of the tears is gratitude's sweet poverty, the tatters that he wears. So I'm really hearing with that gratitude, I'm hearing that it's hard to talk of gratitude in terms of, it's easy to miss the way, and gratitude's poverty is that he tries to use words to describe it when there aren't really words to describe it.
That's part of it. That's almost like that, the feeling being out of plumb with speech, you know, the thing. It's interesting here, they're personifying gratitude, making gratitude into a man who wears this tattered coat. Okay. And that's, you know, it's that sweet poverty. You know, okay, so.
And so that's the first part, is that it's hard to find. I'm really hearing that it's hard to find words to really express gratitude.
Right.
Gratitude wears tatters, and to strive to speak of it is to miss the way, and you get tears with it. It's almost like gratitude is unspeakable.
It's kind of overwhelming. It's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming and it's unspeakable. And then the second stanza is a better coat if he possessed. So a better way of being than trying to express the unexpressible, if he possessed, would help him to conceal, not subjugate, the mutineer whose title is the soul.
To conceal it from whom? You know, conceal it, make it private, and rather than to try to beat it down, or make it, you know, to conceal.
You know, and it's so personal that it could make you get to tears. It's gratitude is so personal that it makes you well up with tears of gratitude. That it is personal, like you were saying, Shirley.
And it's another thing here, though, too, is this business between concealing gratitude and subjugating it. Because I wonder if gratitude, okay, if he had a better coat, if he could speak better, you know, more fluently, would that conceal, it wouldn't conceal the soul,
but why,
as much as, oh, okay, oh, so it's the kind of thing that if you could express your gratitude adequately to someone who had done you a kindness, would that somehow subjugate that person? Would that?
I think that the thing that I don't understand, the part uh-huh. that I do not understand about this, it is gratitude cannot be adequately expressed by words. It's tatters that that it wears. And if a better coat, if he possessed, whoever he is, would help him conceal the mutineer. Why would you call the soul the mutineer? The mutineer is the one that is.
Yeah.
The mutineer is the one that's the rebel. That's the soul is the rebel. And he's saying that he'd like to be able to conceal the rebel, the soul of the soul.
Rather than beat down the rebel.
Yeah.
But how does rebel come into gratitude anyway?
Would help him conceal, not subjugate, not put down, the mutineer whose title is the soul. So the soul is the rebel in this.
Uh-huh.
And if he had better words, if he wasn't wearing tatters, and wasn't in poverty, he'd be able to conceal the mutineer whose title is the soul. I don't know.
I
have more questions than I have answers here, gang.
I do too. I have, you know, it is, what's really interesting about this is that my son-in-law is reading everything Emily Dickens these days. And he is quite the philosopher himself. And he is finding her poetry very profound. And I'm thinking, man, I'm going to have to read about 16 volumes of all of the philosophers in the world before I can finally understand Emily Dickinson. I've always got her stuff. I have never been able to understand her stuff. I only react to it. She has that one poem called, it's about a snake, a narrow fell in the grass, you know. Do you know that one?
No, but this one has,
let me grab my Emily Dickinson. It's one of her more famous poems. I don't know if you have it in that book of that, but it's called, oh gosh, let me see.
Index of the first, this is index of the first lines, and it just goes on and on and on and on and on. She was so prolific. Oh my gosh. Okay, guys. Well, I really enjoyed that discussion, even if I don't understand her. And I'm so glad that she isn't easy to understand, and I just appreciate the discussion. So thank you for that.
Me too.
But it was fun trying to dissect a poem, wasn't it?
It was fun. I enjoyed that. So thank you for that, guys. So all of our fumblings are recorded for posterity. So
here we go. Okay, I found the poem, and I want to read it to you.
Yeah, read it.
Okay. It's the last line of it just absolutely gets me every time I hear it. I get goose pimples. Okay. A narrow fellow in the grass occasionally rides. You may have met him. Did you not? His notice instant is. The grass divides as with a comb. A spotted shaft is seen. And then it closes at your feet and opens further on. He likes a boggy acre, a floor too cool for corn. But when a boy and barefoot, I more than once at noon have passed, I thought a whiplash, unbraiding in the sun. When stooping to secure it, it wrinkled and was gone. But never met this fellow, attended or alone, without a tighter breathing and zero at the bone.
Wow.
Ooh, I think zero at the bone has got to be one of the most powerful phrases in poetry. I don't know what it is. Like I said, I hear it. And, you know, it's that sort of, there's so many people who are so afraid of snakes, you know, and even if you are around them or something, the sudden appearance of a snake, at least for me, I get zero at the bone.
So it just goes right through you then.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I think that is it. Well, it's been fun. I would like to bail early tonight because our dinner is still waiting.
Okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
Sounds good.
Absolutely. Okay, guys. Happy holidays.
Okay.
Happy holidays. And y'all have a happy new year.
I'll see you next year.
And we're writing rhyming resolutions.
We're gonna rhyme our way into resolutions for next year. Absolutely.
Okay.
Rhyme and
okay.
Okay. Love it. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Happy Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Next year.